Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora, nau mai, haere mai, ki te huina o AA Poneke. Welcome everyone to the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air. My name is Vic, I'm an alcoholic and your chairperson for today's meeting. We open AA meetings with a serenity prayer and I invite you to join me. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Right, we'll kick off the meeting with the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Right. So we've got the preamble. Today we have Came to Believe and Associated Friends in the studio to share their experience, strength, and hope. So the way their meeting runs is they read a little reading from the book, the approved literature, Came to Believe. And then after that, we'll just go around the room and hear everyone's experience, strength, and hope. So, Jono, would you like to kick us off with the reading for today?
Thanks, Victoria. My name's Jono. I'm an alcoholic. I've chosen a reading today called Happiness. It's on page 110 from the book Came to Believe. I'll start that off. Happiness. To arrive at a working definition of happiness in my attempts to apply the blueprint of AA to rebuilding a shattered life, I tried first to recall the happiness we chased in the old days. I suspect that for most of us, happiness was equated with bliss. In booze, we reached for euphoria, release from even the faintest threat of responsibility. We wanted insulation against the urgent clanging of the world around us, a soft berth on a languid cloud. And for fleeting moments just before the curtain of oblivion cranked down, we did drift into that never-never state. Then they said, come into AA, we'll help you maintain sobriety and you'll know real happiness. The sobriety was real, but suddenly so was the world, a harsh and pitiless place we'd never fully faced before. Where was this highly touted stuff they called happiness? A latter-day philosopher has said that happiness is not something we experience, it's something we remember. Still, at the risk of sounding unfashionable, I'll say I am very happy. Let me hasten to add that none of what I now possess came easy. For me, it has been and is a tough grind. Relinquishing the prerogatives of chronic brattery never comes easy. But early in the game, I needed definitions. Serenity, a word we've used from the moment we struggled into our first AA meeting, was from the start a tricky one. Seems to mean anything from sanforized, snag-proof, fully guaranteed bliss to the ability to maintain a stiff upper lip when things don't go our way. I've heard the Serenity Prayer chanted as an incantation to wield a spell against temptation, a wand to wave away all unpleasantness. For what it's worth, my own definition of serenity evolved somewhat like this. It appears to me that most of the wrenching turmoil in people's lives, whether or not they are alcoholic, derives from too stubborn persistence in trying to resolve insoluble problems. That's why the philosophy contained in the Serenity Prayer is one of the most important guidelines I've found in AA. Accept the things you cannot change. It's so simple. If the problem can't be solved today, simply drop it. I grant that it's not always easy. It takes self-discipline, a faculty infrequently found in newly sober alcoholics. And on the other hand, problems which can be solved provide the real excitement in life. The daily challenge to grapple with and master the conflicts encountered from dawn to dark is stimulating. The last line of the Serenity Prayer contains the clinker, the wisdom to know the difference between soluble and insoluble situations. As one who is most suspicious of his wisdom since sobering up anyway, I find that substituting the word honesty for wisdom often furnishes the clue to the answer I'm seeking. Second tenet of the Serenity Prayer is too frequently slurred over. I'm constantly amazed at the number of so-called obstacles I've overcome after giving them a second look, mustering what meager resources I have, then taking the hoe in hand. Serenity to me, therefore, is the absence of insoluble conflict. And it is up to me first to determine whether, after an honest look at myself, I can cope with the problem, then to decide whether it is to be tackled, passed over to another day, or dismissed forever. We can establish goals with realistic horizons if we maintain rigorously honest recognition of our limitations. Winning the daily skirmishes involved in achieving these goals is exciting. These are the real kicks. The Charles Adams house I'm attempting to rebuild will never be the Taj Mahal, but it will be my own handiwork with all its quirks of do-it-yourself and built-in bloodstains and bloopers of enthusiasm unrelieved by any real talent in this department. I will never grow tomatoes the size of my neighbours, but my puny little produce tastes better on my table than his beauties ever would. For the first time, I'm giving an employer a fair shake, and I know the warmth and satisfaction of working on a team, contributing my tiny share to a successful whole. The only gallery my paintings will ever adorn runs between our living room and the front hall, but dabbling in a new field is fun, and the things are improving, even if I'm the only one who can see the change. Our school budget was defeated, but at least I had the satisfaction of knowing we put up a good fight. Imagine even being interested in such a thing in the old days. Wait till next year. I barely knew the family I lost to booze. My present wife and children, direct dividends of sobriety, give me the greatest joy. Never in my life before AA had I really done anything for anyone. Yet even today I can't quite catch up, for I still receive more than I can ever give. There's only one thing as beautiful as the face of a four-year-old boy at storytelling time, and that is the face of his little sister. So happiness to me is fulfillment, the satisfaction gained from knowing that you did the best your honestly evaluated limitations would permit in all phases of living. Happiness is gratitude for the miracle which granted another go around at a life once abandoned. And happiness is growing up. It's learning to recognize all the things you really have. Happiness is for experiencing as well as remembering. That's from an alcoholic in New Hartford, New York.
Thanks, Jono. So we'll kick off the sharing portion of the show, and I will ask Patty to please share.
Kia ora. My name's Patty. I'm an alcoholic. So alcoholism, so for me, I started drinking as a teenager, and talking of happiness, I'm just reflecting on that. I had a very happy life as a child. You know, quite often I would think of somebody who was alcoholic, if I ever thought about it at all, as somebody who was pretty damn miserable, who had lots of things to flee from. But actually, you know, I had a comfortable home life, loving parents, surrounded by family, and so I had every reason to feel happiness. I think when I came into sobriety, and I was 44, when I finally realised after years of drinking from the age of 18 that there was something fundamentally wrong with my life that was associated with my consumption of alcohol, I came in and I realised, well, I guess it was not only was it a terrible revelation to find that actually my drinking had caused so many problems in my life, but that I was, somebody suggested that I might be an alcoholic. And for me, that was sort of like a gut-wrenching blow, really. I could not believe that I suffered from alcoholism. I had had a job. I was still in my job, although I was hanging on by my fingernails. I had, you know, relationships that I thought were okay. And I actually thought that the issues that I suffered with in life was other people, that other people, in hindsight, I guess I never thought that at the time. So I guess just going back into my drinking, it was just something I did. People thought that I liked to drink, and I thought I liked to drink. I didn't realise that there was an addictive element to it. I didn't realise there was anything abnormal with my drinking. And I guess that's the problem with this strange disease I suffer from, is that, you know, everybody else is drinking and I can only compare my own experience with myself. You know, what you are drinking, you know, I'd go out to a party or go out somewhere and I probably would have had a few drinks before I went out, and then I'd look at other people and they seemed to drink the same as me. Wasn't till I went in sobriety, I went to a mate's house after work and went there for dinner, and she said to me, would you like a coffee? And I said, hey, no, it's okay to have a gin. I'm fine, you know, I'm not drinking, but I don't mind. I'm comfortable with you drinking. And she said, I always have coffee when I come home. I never have gin. I only ever have gin when you're coming, because actually I know that that's what you do. So it was kind of, how do you measure your own drinking against other people's? And I guess I'm not the best judge of that. When all of a sudden my life started to come undone and I could see my children who were adult children by that stage, feeling uncomfortable around me and walking away really from my drinking and the life that I was kind of leading. I think that I was quite shocked that I couldn't stop. That was the first time I think that I ever really tried to stop, was when, you know, my life was falling apart. I was ringing people in the middle of the night, forgetting that I'd done that. I was not showing up to appointments that I was supposed to be at. And it just was really out of control. Felt dreadful. I felt worried about losing my job. And so I tried to stop drinking and I couldn't. You know, I stopped one day and I stopped for 2 days. I stopped for 3 days and then I finally gave up and I went to a drug and alcohol treatment centre, to a counselling centre. And the counsellor there suggested very gently that I may suffer from the disease of alcoholism. As I said before, I was horrified. I did not see that, that I was that person. However, I was very fortunate. I got into a drug and alcohol rehabilitation centre at Queen Mary down in Hamner. And it felt like the worst thing in my life. It was the best thing in my life, really, because I was introduced to the nature of what I suffered from, which is alcoholism, and what that meant. And I learned that I was always that part of that, and I don't know whether it happened before I drank or after, but actually that I was always going to be discontented with my life, and that's exactly as it was. I could not get people to comply, I guess, with the way I thought they should behave. And actually, the only person that needed to change was myself. So I went into treatment thinking it was the worst thing in the world, and I came out realising that this was the greatest gift that had been given to me, was a program of AA that actually was developed by alcoholics, people who had the same issue as me, and it had solutions in it that actually were designed specifically for an alcoholic like myself. So it's been a number of years now that I've been in sobriety. I still attend AA regularly. I don't have the compulsion to drink. I have freedom from that and have had for some time now. But I know when I go to AA, I hear stories from other people who decided that they were well and they didn't need AA anymore. I mean, it's not I don't have to be here. I am here because I choose to be here. I know that I can't drink safely, therefore I choose not to drink. And what I learn in AA with my fellow alcoholics and with the program of AA, which is including things like the Serenity Prayer, I actually I learn how I can live my life. To me, how I see it is that at the age of 44, for every disappointment, for every wonderful event in my life, I had drunk to celebrate or to commiserate. And what I learned at 44 was I didn't have the emotional maturity that many people have when they start to, you know, start as 16, 17-year-olds to learn about life's disappointments. So, you know, the program of AA for me has been teaching me how to develop the skills to live life on life's terms, to accept people as they are. And to not go around annoying everybody, you know, like, well, I don't know whether I did annoy everybody, but I was very opinionated. In fact, I still am, really, but I try not to be. I have learned how to get through each day without needing to have a drink. And the things that I wanted when I was younger. I don't really want anymore. I'm quite contented for life to take me where it takes me. And so I guess, you know, it's a simple life. It doesn't have to be a simple life, of course. I know lots of Elkies who have sobriety and have very exciting lives. Mine isn't that exciting. It's just I enjoy my family. I don't need to pick up a drink. At the end of the day, I kind of reflect on my day to try and make sure that I'm keeping in line with other people and that, yeah, I haven't done what I used to do, which was probably argue with people, force my opinions on others, etc. So anyway, so it's good to be at this meeting today and to share my experience, strength and hope with you. So thank you, Victoria.
Thanks, Paddy.
So just a reminder, you're listening to the AA meeting on air, and we're broadcasting on Wellington Access Radio. That's 106.1 FM. If you or someone you know can relate to the sharing today and you're in New Zealand and you're wanting to reach out, you can contact us on a 24/7 free helpline, 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 675. For all resources, so the 0800 number, I know my memory is not the best, so if you can't memorize it, or you're wanting to look at things like meeting lists in your area, if you're wanting to hear this show as a podcast, the best place to go is actually our website, www.alcoholicsanonymous.org.nz, and you'll be able to find all AA resources for New Zealand. If you're listening from overseas, I would suggest that Google is your friend, so I would suggest looking up AA in your country. There is English-speaking AA all over the world. So we'll continue on with the sharing portion of the show, and I will ask Graham to please share his experience, strength and hope with us.
Hi, my name's Graham. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Graham.
For me, drinking became a problem later in my life, in my 40s, it was when I tried to stop drinking that I realised I had a problem, and it was because I couldn't stop drinking. I tried all sorts of things to stop drinking, and you know, I had little bits of success where I could get some days or weeks of not drinking, but eventually I would drink again. And for me, it was really the first time I tried something. Tried to do something and I couldn't do it, and I found that really, really frustrating and hard to deal with. It coincided for me, my wife and daughter, they also stopped drinking, and they were able to just do it, and I continued to struggle to the point where the more I tried to stop drinking, the worse my drinking actually got, and my drinking escalated to a point where I really struggled to have a day of not drinking in a week. And eventually it led to me to admitting to my doctor that I had a drinking problem. And that was in February last year, and in March last year, my wife took me to an AA meeting, and that was where my, my journey with AA started. And in that meeting, I heard people share. And they shared things that I could relate to, things, and they had some sobriety up, and they were in this room, and they seemed okay, you know, and at that point I couldn't imagine a life without alcohol, and definitely couldn't imagine being happy, you know, if I wasn't drinking. I still at that point in my drinking, I still had times where I was happy, but really the there were more times that I wasn't, and I was really I was sort of at the point where I was kind of almost defeated, I guess, and given up, and just felt like there wasn't anything more for me in life, and drinking was about it. So for me to hear some people talking, I got a tiny little bit of hope in that meeting, and I thought if I can somehow get to, you know, to sort of a week or 2 weeks of not drinking, you know, that's about all I could think into the future at that point. And that was about all the effort that I could kind of muster. And for me, I heard some people talking, and they said some things to me that really helped me to give the sobriety, you know, a bit of a go. And that for me, it was hearing people say, you know, just one day at a time, and also don't pick up the first drink. Those were two really important things for me that allowed me to really get through those first few days and weeks. And for me, you know, the AA has, you know, allowed me to it's given me like there's the 12 steps, there's a framework around, it's a program that allows me to be sober and to also live a sober life. You know, the first thing was getting sober, and I managed, you know, to do that in those since that first meeting that I went to. And once I was able to do that, it gave, you know, initially it gave my body and my mind a chance to sort of get well. And that was like quite refreshing. But it also meant I was in those first few months, I was like, life happens, right? And things were happening to me, and what I noticed was they were things that would usually lead me to drinking, and that wasn't an option now. So it was like, what do I do? I've got this situation or this feeling or this emotion or this thought in my head, and I can't drink now, so I don't know what to do. And the AA program gave me some sort of guidelines or suggestions of what I could do, and that really helped me not picking up again, not picking up a drink. You know, it's allowed me to you know, like I say, live a sober life. And that's been the real, you know, bonus from going to AA that I didn't even envision was something. You know, I just wanted to stop drinking. That's all I wanted. And so, you know, it's challenging. But what I've learned over the last year and a half is that, for me, you know, I just need to take it one day at a time. That's what works for me. You know, I just need to think about today, and what do I need to do today? to stay sober. And as those things come up in life that usually would lead me to drinking, I need to deal with those. And usually that means I need to talk to somebody. And, you know, for me, that's how I continue to be sober. And so, you know, I'm really grateful that that I've been able to, you know, be given those sort of tools. Really, it's like a toolbox that I can use, and so far that's what's working for me to continue to be sober, and it's the only thing that's worked. You know, I've tried a lot of things before I came to AA, and nothing worked. I always ended up picking up, and you know, so I'm just grateful that I can go to a meeting. It doesn't matter where I am. You know, if I'm out of town or on holiday, there are meetings I can get to. And that I go to meetings because that reminds me that I'm an alcoholic. You know, the way that I think about alcohol and about drinking, you know, that's, for me, that's what makes me an alcoholic. It's the way that I think about it. Don't seem to have that ability to stop. And so, you know, that's why I keep going to AA, to hear what I need to hear. 'Cause if I'm left to myself, you know, the thoughts that I have in my head, you know, they don't take long to sort of, you know, make me want to pick up again. And, you know, this is something, you know, it's not something that I just do and I get to the end of the program and I'm all fixed and, you know, I don't have a drinking problem anymore. This is a lifelong thing that I've learnt. And so, you know, that's why I continue to go to meetings and do the work that I need to do, you know, one day at a time. And yeah, so that's me, and I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Thanks, Graham. So just a reminder, you're listening to AA Meeting on Air Wellington, and we're broadcasting on Wellington Access Radio. That's 106.1 FM. If you or someone you know is wanting to reach out to AA, I would say the best place to go is the website, www.alcoholicsanonymous.org.nz. We have an 0800 number where you'll find a sober alcoholic on the other end of the phone 24/7. And we've also got lists online where you can find a meeting near you. Right, so I will ask Jono to share now.
Thanks, Victoria. My name's Jono. I'm an alcoholic. Not sure where I'm supposed to put this microphone. I guess this is the point where I say my home groups came to believe 11 a.m. on a Sunday morning. I started drinking pretty late compared to, I think, a lot of people that I see in AA. You know, I started drinking when I was 15. There were two occasions, I think, before then. The biggest memory that I have is my 15th birthday, but, you know, there were two occasions before then when I was drinking with a friend, nicking beers out of his brother's garage. And I remember, you know, I would have two and he would have one, and then the next time he had two and I had four, so the escalation started really early on. And you know, I basically became a dozen a day drinker from the age of 15. I spent a lot of time when I was in high school, and when I was kind of, other people were growing up and I wasn't, I spent most of my time thinking about drinking and where I was going to get another one. And I didn't really realise it. I didn't really understand that it was taking over so much of my life. It ended up shaping my early career, the relationships that I had with other people. But to me, it was all normalised. It was just the way that it was, and I didn't really trust anybody that didn't drink like I did. And things, you know, I think things were, looking back on it, things were pretty tough. But at the time, I didn't think that they were. I just thought that it was the solution to all the problems I didn't really have, or didn't really think that I had. And, you know, it made me bigger, harder, longer, faster, more intelligent than anybody else around me. And meanwhile, alcohol dissolved my life around me. You know, it was this crazy delusion that I was constantly chasing this high that I never got, that I never managed to reach. So it started off pretty aggressively, I guess, and it finished really lonely. And my last drink was spent alone in my room, having lost everything that I had thought that I'd built up. I didn't think that I would ever lose a job due to my drinking until I did. I never thought that I would lose a relationship due to my drinking until I did. I didn't think that I'd lose the house and the car and the kids until I did. And then my last drink was spent on Christmas Day 2019 alone in my room. And I woke up panicked, wondering how I'd done that, how I'd managed to end up back there. And I think the lasting memory of what I felt when I woke up that morning was this kind of separation, the isolation, and the expectations that I had of the way that my life should have been. We met up for a coffee before we come and do this radio show, and we were kind of talking about the way that things should be, or my perception of the way that things should be. And this reading that I picked out today sort of alludes to it as well, that search for happiness, like I hadn't achieved it. And at the point of my last drink, I was 10 months sober and kind of hanging on, just clinging on to the way that things, you know, hoping that things were going to work out. And things hadn't worked out the way that I thought that they should. And it was just this enormous disappointment. But nothing was quite as bad as the disappointment of waking up that morning on that Boxing Day on the 26th. Over the next 8 to 10 weeks, I did actually have, I had a sponsor the morning that I woke up, and I called him that morning, and we restarted the process that I'd kind of teetered around the outside of. I told him, well, he told me actually in no uncertain terms that I needed to go to a meeting every day, and that I needed to call him every day, and that we needed to actually make some progress on taking the steps as they were written in the big book. And that's, you know, I made a commitment when I woke up to go and do that. I guess it was just the day that I woke up and realized that I'd had enough. And what I started to experience was this, the isolation that I thought that I felt, I started to feel it in a different way. I started to feel a separation from the life that I had before, when I reconnected in a meaningful way with that man, with my sponsor, and with the rest of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I really appreciate in the reading that it alludes to happiness as being something that's constructed, you know, towards the end of, and I really feel like that was something that I had to try and find in my life, or not find, I had to make it in my life. I think that up until the point of my last relapse, I had been expecting somebody else to get sober for me, and it simply didn't work. It was never going to work that way. That was one of the warped expectations that I had of the way that things should be in my life. But when I started to make a concerted effort and come to believe that it's something that I can actually do, things started to come true. One of the reasons that I chose that reading, that I like it so much, is that there's a couple of lines just at the end of it that says that happiness to me is fulfillment, the satisfaction gained from knowing that you did your best honestly. And that means so much to me, where my expectations were so incredibly high, they were never going to be met. And so I lived my life in this perpetual disappointment, and the way that I got around that, the way that I dealt with that, was to drink. And then when I drank, I upset the allergy that I have inside myself, you know, this other thing that I've come to believe, that I am allergic to alcohol. And I'll find a reason when things don't meet my standards to go and have a drink. And when I drink, I can't stop, and then I don't know what I'm going to do or who I'm going to do it to. And I just perpetuate this cycle of anger and disappointment in my life. But I have come to believe that I have the power to actually change that. I can change my own expectations. It's not about lowering my expectations maybe it is, but, you know, lowered expectations aren't necessarily the goal. It's just having reasonable expectations, so I can meet my own, I can meet my own needs, and I can then help other people to meet some of what they want, and my life improves as a result of it. You know, the other line that always sticks out to me in this reading is the second to last one, that happiness is gratitude for the miracle which granted another go around at a life once abandoned. You know, I didn't realize that I had abandoned my life, because I never really felt like I'd had one. But after I had just a little bit of time up, not a whole lot of time up, but I'd made a few processes, and I think I was working through my fourth step with my sponsor at the time. I started to realize that this was actually another chance, and I started to realize that it was possible. I think coming to believe that there was actually hope that I could stop drinking and that my life could improve is the one biggest thing that I'm most grateful for in my sobriety. And that word gratitude, I believe, is there's a difference between gratitude and thankfulness in my life. I'm thankful for so many things, but gratitude is something that I take action on. It's something that I pay back. It's something that I owe, like a due, that I offer back to people. And I am grateful for having a second chance, you know, having the understanding that maybe I wasn't the one that was abandoned. I was the one that was abandoned in my life, and that means that I can actually change my behavior. You know, I can change the way that I think, and I can give it another go. And since I've kind of come to that conclusion, I've done other things. I've been and tried to make amends to people that didn't work. Some of them may have been too soon. Some of them may never happen. But I did the best that I could, honestly, and I can honestly say that if it comes to it, you know, I will give it another go. And I've also made amends to people who it did work out. People that I never thought would have left, people that had left my life that I never would have thought would come back, did come back. You know, and I now have real, really true, meaningful relationships in my life, not the same kind of shallow, surface level friendships or acquaintances that I used to have when I was drinking. The ability to form an emotional bond with another human being is an incredible thing to understand. That I think I can only have in sobriety. It's also a fragile thing that I'll lose if I ever give this up again. And it comes through in more, I guess, more plastic kind of ways. You know, I have a job. I'm capable of holding down work, which is amazing to me as well. You know, not only that, I have the respect of my employer. You know, one of the things that my sponsor told me when we took the ninth step, when we started work on the ninth step, well, actually, he told me in the eighth, I think, was that I'd be able to look the world in the eye, and I thought he was just so full of it. It just seems like such a corny thing to say, probably pulled directly out of the Big Book, which is. But it's true, you know, I have the capacity now to walk tall in my life, walk down the street without being afraid, without being ashamed. You know, and those are rewards of recovery that I'm really, really, truly grateful for. And I think that it is a miracle. Not a religious person, but I feel like there's been a miracle performed somewhere by something that I'm not sure that I believe in. You know, that's a gratitude that I'll carry, I think, for a long time. Hopefully, fingers crossed. Only I think I'm grateful to be here. Thanks everybody else for joining us in the studio today. We actually have another person here. Rick's just quietly listening. But I just want to say that he's welcome too. And thanks, Victoria.
Thanks, Jono. So just a reminder, you're listening to AA Meeting on Air Wellington, and we're broadcasting on Wellington Access Radio. That's 106.1 FM. If you or someone you know wants to get in touch with AA in New Zealand, best place to go is www.alcoholicsanonymous.org.nz. There is an 0800 number manned 24/7. And we also have this really great map where you just put in your location and it shows you all the meetings in your area. Once again, if you're international, Google is your friend. So I will share briefly. Kia ora, I'm Vic. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everyone. How much time have we got? Okay, we're good. I was just sitting here and I was thinking about being in rehab at 20, having failed everything. And I had this moment of insight and clarity, and I think it was probably the only moment of insight and clarity I'd had in 20 years, which was that alcoholism, you know, the fire of alcoholism had completely gutted my life. And I was able to sit there and just have this insight of that I was grateful for it. And I hadn't discovered AA yet. I didn't know anything about gratitude, but it's the first time I remember feeling grateful ever. And not the grateful you feel for your parents or when they buy you Christmas gifts and stuff like that, where you say you're grateful. I mean, real gratitude, because I realized that I was on this trajectory and I was living my life in a way that didn't align with my values and wasn't making me happy. And my life had been completely gutted, and I had this opportunity to do something different. And it didn't feel like an opportunity. It felt like being strong-armed by life into changing. But in that moment, I just remember that moment of recognition, you know, that here was a chance to do something different. And I still dragged my feet and behaved like a brat and took a while to go to AA. And then when I did go to AA, I think I was just very badly behaved for a few months. But I just still had that kernel of knowing that there was some other way, you know, that I didn't have to keep going how I was going. And I was thinking about the reading on happiness and on fulfillment. And, you know, the reading talks about how fulfillment is where the writer finds happiness now. And, yeah, just thinking about that life that I was living. And it wasn't just the drinking. It was actually my attitude and of just chasing. I was just constantly chasing. And most of the time I was chasing being drunk. But I was chasing other things as well. You know, I just was constantly chasing people, places, things, achievement, external validation, relationships, love. And it was never enough. And I was just hungry all the time. I was just so thirsty, you know, thirsty for alcohol, but thirsty for everything. And I just felt empty, and it was awful. And I'd felt that emptiness since I was really small, and nothing really filled it until I found alcohol, and that did a pretty good job. And, you know, that's why I just fell in love with alcohol. And I was willing to let go of everything for it. You know, I didn't really think of things that I lost as consequences. I just saw them as things that got in the way of my drinking. And anything that got in the way of my drinking, I was willing to let go of. I didn't see it as a huge loss. So when the drinking stopped working, that was the most afraid I've ever been. I just felt abandoned, you know. So I couldn't keep going. And I had this, you know, fire that just gutted everything. And so I came into AA, and I was given tools and support and access to a higher power. And I was given these building blocks to slowly rebuild my life. But I wasn't rebuilding my life. I was getting a completely new one, you know. And that's something my sponsor would always say to me, you know. She said, you don't get your old life scrubbed up new. You get a completely new life. And for me, it's a life just filled with fulfillment. And that means filled with happiness. And I remember one of the first times I felt really fulfilled in sobriety was when I was volunteering and I was cleaning octopus guts off of fish hooks, because we'd taken guests from the homeless community fishing. And I was doing this, and someone behind me said, gee, you're not afraid of hard work, are you? And I kind of looked around to check he was talking to me, because I was just so used to being lazy, selfish, and useless. And I would never describe anyone else that way, but it's how I thought of myself, you know. I was so horrible to myself. And I just felt like, oh, I can do things. I can be of use to other people, you know. And that's what AA has given me, amongst, you know, so many other gifts, but just that sense of fulfillment. So I think I'll leave it there. But thank you, everyone, for coming. And just a reminder, guys, the meeting in the studio today has been Came to Believe, and they meet Sunday morning, 11 a.m., Trades Hall, Vivian Street, Wellington. If you can't remember all that, I would once again suggest going to the website. I've been banging on about the website all the show, but it's got all the resources. So we'll just leave it there for today, and I will ask everyone to please join me in closing the meeting in the traditional way with the Serenity Prayer.
Thanks, Victoria.
Thanks, Victoria.
God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.